and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up, how well is the state of Florida doing when it comes to protecting the environment, creating good-paying jobs, educating children, and providing health care for those who need it? The annual legislative session began yesterday in Tallahassee with speeches by a lot of politicians. We'll hear some of what they had to say in a moment. We'll also hear from a grassroots group that works to make Florida a better place when it comes to working conditions, the environment, and education. First of all, let's go back and listen to some of what was said yesterday as the annual legislative session, the 60-day session, opened. We're going to hear from House Speaker Richard Corcoran, a Republican. He's from Pasco County, and he criticized Florida cities that refused to detain people who might be undocumented migrants. And he criticized Tampa for considering a new tax. Let's listen in to what Richard Corcoran said yesterday.
You can't be the city of Tampa and think you have a right to create an illegal tax simply because you need more money. And you cannot be an elected official who thinks you get to pick and choose what laws you get to obey. Last session, we passed a bill, Representative Metz, that said we will not have a single sanctuary city in our state. The Senate didn't take it up. And now we have politicians who say they want to make the entire state of Florida a sanctuary state, just like California. That's unacceptable. You cannot have politicians who go out there and decide that the rule of law is a multiple choice test, and you simply get to go out there and say none of the above.
Well, you got cut off there, but that was Richard Corcoran, the House Speaker, probably one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful person in Tallahassee as the legislative session gets underway. Some people think that any House Speaker in Florida is more powerful than the governor. It's a debatable point, but we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's listen to a story from Florida Public Radio about Richard Corcoran, once more the House Speaker from Pasco County, and his position on increasing taxes this year.
During his opening remarks at the Capitol on Tuesday, House Speaker Richard Corcoran made a pledge.
The Florida House will never support raising taxes on any individual or any business ever.
Corcoran didn't let his counterparts raise local property taxes for public schools last session, and he doesn't plan to relent this time either. In recent years, Governor Rick Scott and the state Senate have proposed increasing funding for K-12 schools, mostly by collecting more money in local property taxes. Under their plans, the tax rate would stay the same. But homeowners and business owners' tax bills would go up anyway, because property values are increasing. Scott and Senate leaders contend it's not a tax increase. Corcoran doesn't see it that way.
It's a tax increase any time government takes more money from you this year than they took last year, and it was of no account of your own.
Corcoran prevailed last year when lawmakers lowered the tax rate slightly to keep property tax bills from going up. Fast forward several months, and the battle has begun again.
It is a debate that the Senate seems to want to have, and if they want to have it, we'll have it.
I'm Jessica Bakeman in Miami.
All right, Richard Corcoran, the House Speaker. Let's listen to part of what Governor Rick Scott said yesterday as he opened up the session of the legislature. And you'll hear that Governor Scott echoed a lot of what Richard Corcoran has been saying in those first two sound bites we heard.
Working together, we've taken billions of dollars out of government's hand and given it back to Florida families. Like many of you here, this is my last year in this position. This is my last session to cut taxes. And we must acknowledge that unfortunately at some point there will be politicians sitting in this chamber who are not as fiscally responsible as we say. I am sure there will be people who hold down our jobs down the road who want to increase taxes, otherwise known as taking more money from hardworking Floridians. Decades ago, Florida voters approved an amendment to the Constitution that prohibited a state income tax. The skeptics warned that bad things would happen. Skeptics were wrong. I want 2018 to be the year that Florida voters pass a constitutional amendment that makes it hard for politicians to raise taxes. My proposal would require two-thirds of the legislature to vote on a tax increase for it to become law. Some have asked if this proposal would be in effect during a financial emergency or another national recession. And my answer is clear. Absolutely.
Governor Rick Scott, sounding very firm about not raising taxes at all, no matter what happens here in Florida. And that is a part of what he had to say yesterday as he opened up the session of the legislature. We're going to get the perspective of a statewide progressive group. Several progressive groups held press conferences around the state yesterday, criticizing the direction of the legislature. And our guest right now is Ray Seaman, who is with Progress Florida, a progressive group that takes issue with some of what was said yesterday by Republicans in Tallahassee. Progress Florida says that Florida's economy is working for the wealthy and the powerful, not for the people. And Ray Seaman, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Great to be here, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
So those two sound bites, or three sound bites that we heard from Richard Corcoran saying he's not going to raise taxes, criticizing sanctuary cities, and the governor wanting a constitutional amendment that would prohibit or make it a lot harder to raise taxes here in the state of Florida. Let's start there. What do you think of what they said?
Well, I think, yeah, we should step back and actually look at their record over the last few years, because they've largely gotten their way in terms of passing big corporate tax giveaways for the wealthy and well-connected. They've largely either cut or barely maintained funding for public schools, for health care, for environmental conservation. And what really has been that result? You heard the governor give off a few statistics yesterday. But the reality is, you know, more than half of Florida counties have actually lost jobs since 2008. They're actually in a worse position today than they were even during the depths of the recession. You know, our job growth as a state has been around half the national average since 2007. And in terms of all the quote-unquote new jobs that have been created, under Governor Scott, his administration, and the Republican-controlled legislature, we're still around a half a million jobs behind where we were in 2008. And I think this point is pretty obvious because most hardworking Floridians have felt this in their pocketbooks over the last few years. The median household income, you know, we're 36th in the nation. And that doesn't even begin to get into the very poor position Florida is in on a whole range of indicators.
Let me stop you right there. I mean, the governor travels the state every few days, opening up a new business or saying that such and such business has moved here to the state of Florida. And if you watch the governor and don't pay attention to the numbers that you're talking about, it looks like the number of jobs is just skyrocketing here in Florida, and they're all good jobs. Could you tell us where you get your numbers from?
Yeah, that's just from national employment statistics, from the Labor Department, and from standard sources. You know, the governor does a very good job, I think, of playing sort of the PR game. But, you know, the average Floridian, I think, has seen not much progress in the last few years.
Okay, so more than half of Florida's counties have actually lost jobs since the governor came into office. Is that right?
That's correct, and that's actually from the Florida Chamber of Commerce, which is one of the governor's biggest cheerleaders.
All right, so we'll talk about pay. I mean, are these good-paying jobs? Are these STEM jobs and construction jobs and professional jobs? Or are these service sector, retail, tourist jobs? Can you characterize where the job growth is?
Yeah, it's been overwhelmingly in the service sector. A lot of these jobs are not particularly well-paying, and certainly, you know, some of that isn't helped by the fact that Florida's minimum wage, even though it does increase every year a little bit because of inflation, it's still only around $8 an hour, only marginally better than the federal minimum wage is, and certainly much far below what the average Floridian needs just to keep a roof over their head and be able to pay the bills and, God forbid, even be able to save a little at the end of the month.
So we're talking about creating more and more working poor here in the state of Florida.
That's effectively what we're doing, and we all pay for that in the form of transfer payments and other benefits that are needed to help those folks. So the reality is it's not been a very big win for the average Floridian over the last few years.
I want to go back to this question of tax cuts. We heard both the House Speaker, Richard Corcoran, and the governor say that they're against any tax increases, or they're going to fight hard to make sure it's harder to increase taxes in the future. The governor is proud to say that he's cut taxes 75 times since he came into office. How have those tax cuts helped the average person here in the state of Florida?
Hardly at all. You know, the typical tax break that the legislature has pushed through the last few years have mostly been to corporations. There's been very little that has come back to Floridians. You can sort of count the dollars on two hands, or certainly under $100, I think, a year that they've cut. It's been overwhelmingly for the wealthy and well-connected.
I just want to go back to jobs for a second. In those half of Florida counties that have actually lost jobs since 2008, the Trump counties are primarily the rural counties and the counties in the panhandle. Would those also be the counties that lost jobs?
Yeah, it's mostly rural and exurban counties that have sort of borne the brunt of what we like to call Rick's recession, which has just been the fact that the growth that we've had has been uneven throughout the state. And the growth that we have had in jobs has been few and far between, and those jobs that have been created aren't really sustaining Floridians economically.
Our guest is Ray Seaman, who is with a grassroots group called Progress Florida, which takes issue with some of the things that were said yesterday in Tallahassee about the great things that are happening in the state. We heard Governor Rick Scott, and we heard House Speaker Richard Corcoran. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. If you want to join in the conversation, you can. 813-239-9663. The governor is saying essentially that he plans to spend more money this year on education than any other governor in history. Is that accurate, do you think?
Not really. We tend to have this debate every year where the governor comes out and says, hey, I'm increasing funding for education. The reality is we're barely getting back to where we were in the depths of the recession in terms of funding per student. And the reality is the student population has grown since around 2008, 2009, obviously. Certainly the needs have grown as well. So we barely caught up to where we were in 2008, and we haven't accounted for that inflation that's taken place. So we're very much behind. And in fact, Florida is around 41st in the country in terms of education spending per student, according to Education Week. So we're very, very far behind in education funding. A lot of that is because the governor and House Speaker Corcoran strongly support our current tax system in Florida, which is the second most regressive tax code in the country, according to the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy. And what that means in English is that most hardworking, low-income Floridians bear the brunt of the responsibility, the burden of the tax system in Florida. It's not the wealthy folks who are paying that much out of their pocket as opposed to hardworking people. So that's the tax system that Rick Scott and Richard Corcoran support, and with their constitutional amendment, essentially want to make permanent, which would be a disaster for everyday Floridians and, I think, our economic future.
Is that because we rely so much on the sales tax here in the state of Florida and fees here in Florida to fund our government?
Yes, that's exactly right. We also maintain, again, thanks to Governor Scott and House Speaker Corcoran and the Republican-controlled legislature, we also maintain billions of dollars in corporate tax loopholes, unnecessary sales tax exemptions, among other sort of fiscal gimmicks that prevent billions of dollars of tax dollars that could be going towards improving public schools, infrastructure, affordable housing, increasing access to health care, protecting our environment, and improving the water we drink and the air we breathe. Instead, that's staying with big business, and it shouldn't be that way. And again, if Governor Scott gets his way with his proposed constitutional amendment, that would effectively enshrine this very bad tax code, this very raw deal for hardworking Floridians, into law essentially forever.
Well, we're talking with Ray Seaman. He's with the group Progress Florida, which is a progressive group. And yesterday, progressive groups around the state took part in press conferences criticizing the direction the state is taking under Governor Rick Scott and House Speaker Richard Corcoran. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. I guess, you know, on the one hand, if you're giving corporate tax breaks out, handing them out, you'd think that corporations would flood here into Florida and that you'd get some, you know, maybe science companies and medical research companies moving from Boston and Seattle here. But, you know, at the same time, if you've got, according to Education Week, we rank 41st of the nation in education, I think a lot of people who have kids that work at those companies would be afraid to come to Florida, seeing that our education system is so bad. And I'm wondering, with all the high-stakes testing that was put in place since Jeb Bush came into office and the teacher evaluations that we've gone through, shouldn't our state be doing better when it comes to education, or did those ideas not pan out?
Indeed, we should be doing a lot better, and unfortunately, what the last 20 years, really a generation's worth of complete Republican dominance in state government has demonstrated is that a lot of those education reforms have only performed marginally and certainly has not resulted in Florida becoming sort of a tech capital or a STEM capital of the country, the way California has, which is often, you know, depicted by Republican lawmakers as sort of this economic hellscape. But the reality is that state has done very well. They've invested also a lot more heavily in education, certainly than we have. And it's interesting because we, you know, the Republican majority has had the opportunity to govern almost unfettered. They've been checked a few times by the courts and occasionally by constitutional amendments, but they've essentially been able to run their agenda for the last 20 years. And we see the results. This stuff does not work. And Florida desperately needs, I think, a progressive alternative managing the state in the coming years in order to turn this around. We can't keep doing what we've been doing with tax cuts, deregulation, and cutting essential services and expecting things to get better. They've had their chance. It hasn't worked.
You know, Ray, last week, yet another person got into the governor's race, Ron DeSantis, the congressman from the Upper East Coast, just below Jacksonville, he's a Republican, he got in the governor's race and said that he wanted to drain the swamp in Tallahassee. And you point out that Republicans have already been in control of Tallahassee for 20 years. What do you make of his, you know, he says he wants to drain the swamp in Tallahassee. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think you basically took the words right out of my mouth, Rob. But these folks have been in charge since the late 90s. There have literally, been Floridians who have been born in this state and have known essentially all their lives, well into their college years. Only one party has run the show in Tallahassee. It's been one party rule in state government for an entire generation. Their record has not worked. And it's really time for something different.
So as we look at the jobs picture, or look at education, or look at healthcare, or the environment, anything that's happening in the state, the Republicans really own because the Democrats haven't been able to do anything. They don't hold they can't even. Sometimes there have been super majorities of Republicans there in Tallahassee, and Democrats have just had to stand on the sidelines.
Indeed, and I think when sort of the history is written of sort of this period in Florida politics between roughly, 1998 through, 2018, sort of this 20-year period of single-party dominance, has been the Florida legislature doing one thing, and then the people of Florida trying to act and move in a different direction. So when the Florida legislature puts additional burdens on public schools and attacks teachers, the people of Florida try and go to the ballot and push a class size amendment through, a universal free kindergarten through the constitutional amendment process. When the Florida legislature abandons efforts to fund conservation efforts, essential land and water and wildlife conservation efforts, the people of Florida go to the ballot and say, we're going to push you to put hundreds of millions of dollars dedicate that into conservation funding. When the Florida legislature gerrymanders districts to basically protect themselves and ensure that they're always reelected, the people of Florida go to the ballot and say, no, we're going to have fair district amendments to restrict, your gerrymandering activities. So it's not like the Republican legislature has governed with this wonderful popular mandate, because of gerrymandering and a whole host of other factors. Florida in many ways has been held hostage by this very reactionary minority, and Floridians have been trying to, in effect, enact a more progressive agenda through the constitutional amendment process. And I should say this has all happened at the same time when we've had a number of very right-wing conservative amendments put on the ballot. There was a whole bunch of them in 2012. We'll probably see a whole bunch of them this year. And historically, we've defeated those by significant margins. So in many ways, it's been a tale of two Floridas, and I think it's really time for the progressive majority in Florida to emerge, take power, and move our state in a different direction.
Well, it is interesting you point that out because, as you said, Floridians overwhelmingly supported a conservation amendment just a few years ago. The legislature really hasn't followed up on it and funded it. Floridians right. overwhelmingly wanted medical marijuana. If the last time Floridians were asked about raising the minimum wage, they raised it above the national minimum wage. I mean, are you saying that grassroots around the state, Floridians are actually more progressive? And if Floridians are actually more progressive, what's your take on why Tallahassee doesn't reflect that progressivity?
Well, yeah, Rob, I could probably go all day on that question, as could many folks, but some of it used to be, I think, gerrymandering was sort of a big culprit. That's less of a factor now. It still is an issue. I'm not saying it's gone away completely, but it has lost some of its potency thanks to the Fair District Amendment. It's still an uphill climb for progressives, but it's much less steep than it used to be. Certainly the role of big money has also drowned out a lot of the voices of regular citizens. That's an issue. Certainly, folks have debated, the Democratic Party and its effectiveness. There have been a number of issues, but I think at the end of the day, what Floridians are really looking for are progressive candidates who can speak to the challenges that they are seeing in their everyday lives and are proposing ideas that are different than what we've seen in Tallahassee and really speak to a lot of that grassroots energy that has pushed through so many times through various constitutional amendments. Just candidates that embrace that agenda, that can get that message out there. And I think the more people do that, the more consistently that happens, I think the legislature will start reflecting our state a lot more than it currently is.
I want to ask you about healthcare and the environment in just a moment, but your group is Progress Florida. Tell us, what is Progress Florida?
Well, Progress Florida, almost as kind of the name implies, is a progressive advocacy organization. We're an online-based organization, so we look to activate our network of tens of thousands of Floridians from Pensacola to Key West to engage with their elected officials in meaningful ways across a whole host of issues, from education to healthcare to the environment, civil rights, voting rights, reproductive freedom, et cetera, et cetera. So we're at progressflorida.org. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and learn more about us and sign up to get involved.
And these numbers that we're talking about today, when it comes to education, when it comes to jobs, these are all people can go there and find the sources where you're getting these numbers from.
Not on the Progress Florida website, but certainly, even just a quick Google will find a lot of the stuff I've been talking about. But a lot of it's from the Labor Department, the Census Bureau, et cetera, et cetera.
Healthcare. How is Florida doing when it comes to healthcare?
Unfortunately, like a lot of the other areas we've been talking about, that not too well. Florida's 48th in the nation in health insurance coverage, according to the census. And, unfortunately, a lot of that has been due to a lot of the obstruction that Governor Scott and House Speaker Corcoran and the Republican legislature have been doing over the last few years. And it's striking because, Affordable Care Act enrollment has been highest here in Florida, which really demonstrates the incredible need that there is in Florida for just basic health coverage. But there's been virtually no response from Floridian's own state government regarding that need. If anything, they've done everything in their power to stop any expansion of health care, such as Medicaid. They've also attacked hospitals and mostly have just been, unsurprisingly, not that helpful.
You know, it just seems to me that if you're creating low-paying jobs, you end up having a lot of people that fall through the cracks. Their employers don't offer health insurance, or maybe they're working part-time and therefore the employer doesn't give them the full benefits and all that. I mean, it just seems that you're creating, if you're creating more service jobs, retail jobs, jobs in the hospitality industry, you're going to end up with more people needing some sort of state support or government support for healthcare.
Indeed, that's exactly the case. And Florida makes things even worse for folks by undermining the existing Medicaid program we have. Florida has some of the lowest reimbursement rates to doctors who participate in the Medicaid program in the nation. What healthcare programs we do have, we are really skimpy about. Let's be clear, every Floridian doesn't just need health insurance, they need health care, and every Floridian has a fundamental right to health care. And we are very far from that goal right now, but that's really where we need to be heading as a state.
We're talking with Ray Seaman, who is with Progress Florida, which is a grassroots progressive group here in the state of Florida. Here's an email from Mike in St. Petersburg. He writes, I'm continually amazed that so little is said about the fact that the effective tax rate paid by U.S. corporations has been about the same as that paid by corporations in other Western democracies for years, 19% to 21%. This excludes General Electric, which, as Bernie Sanders has pointed out, seldom pays any income tax at all, Charlie Rose's hit job on Bernie notwithstanding. The unsupported claims by Trump and his stooges in Congress that U.S. corporations are at a disadvantage because of the statutory rate of 35% is nothing more than lies in support of a brazen gift to corporations. That's Mike's email, his comment. Did you want to add anything to that, Ray?
Well, there's a very big loophole in Florida's corporate income tax, perhaps one of the more egregious ones. The technical term is called the combined reporting loophole. But what it means, essentially, is that out-of-state corporations won't pay Florida's corporate income tax. Even though they do business here and they earn plenty of money here, they won't. But Florida-based businesses do. And that not only costs us lots of money, over $1 billion and sometimes multiple billions, depending on the estimate you look at. And it also puts local businesses here in Florida at a tremendous disadvantage. Amazingly, or perhaps not surprisingly, as Governor Scott and the Republican-controlled legislature have tried to cut taxes, allegedly in the name of improving the business climate in Florida, they haven't looked at that one, probably because most of those major corporate interests that benefit from that loophole are also generous contributors to their campaign.
Ray, let's take some calls from listeners. We're going to go to George in Lakeland, who has a question. By the way, our phone number is 813-239-9663. George, welcome to WMNF. What's your question for Ray Seaman?
Well, it's more like a comment. Look, I'm very liberal, but I would imagine that I would enjoy sales tax that's being paid by the tourists that come to Florida instead of paying more in property taxes. I would like to shift the burden to the tourists more than coming out of my pocket. That's one thing. Number two, I think with the environment that we're in, especially with Trump, he has another 3 years, and the new tax laws, I think everyone needs to just become a sole proprietor. So if you're a school teacher and, yeah, you have low income, become a tutor and become a sole proprietorship and use that as Schedule C deduction. And then you're incorporated. You have a business. If you're a cook, if you're a janitor, start a cleaning business. Start a cooking business on the side and use those deductions. You can deduct your cell phone. You can deduct your mileage as long as it's for the business. And you got to play the game. I mean, that's what I suggest instead of because we're not going to win. Liberals are not going to win in Florida. And I'm a liberal. I just learned that. I mean, Rick Scott won re-election. Come on, how much clearer is that? I mean, we just can't get it done in Florida. And we just all have to become entrepreneurs and sole proprietorships and just game the system.
And you're saying the tax rate is better if you become a sole proprietor or form an LLC.
In addition to having your W-2, taxes coming in, be an employee.
Okay.
On the side.
All right, George, let's see what Ray thinks about that idea.
There you go.
All right, George, thanks a lot. Thanks for suggesting it. All right, Ray, what would you say?
there's no question that the U.S. tax code historically and today has been written, to encourage business creation and to help business owners. However, the idea that everyday citizens have to basically game the system in order to achieve a fair tax rate, that's a demonstration of a systemic problem that needs to be dealt with. Also, regarding the gentleman's comments about just the sales tax, yes, certainly out-of-state people do pay sales tax, but the sales tax in general is the most regressive, the most unfair tax of all the taxes, even more unfair than the property tax is, from the perspective of just your average Floridian, your average wage earner. Now, certainly the sales tax will always be a sort of a pillar of Florida's tax system as it is in most other states. But there are exemptions for certain businesses and certain activities that we could certainly get rid of that are unnecessary, that aren't really doing anything for the economy, that could raise valuable revenue that we could then invest in things like infrastructure, higher education, et cetera, et cetera.
Could you give us an example?
My favorite one has always been ostrich feed versus ostrich egg. Basically, ostrich feed, I believe, is tax exempt, but the eggs aren't. That's just one very minor example, but there are others definitely out there.
There are all sorts of sales tax exemptions in the state system that tend to benefit the people at the top and not so much the people at the bottom.
Right.
Ray Seaman is with us from Progress, Florida. We're going to go to Miles in Sarasota, and you're listening to 88.5 FM. Hi, Miles. What's your question for Ray?
Oh, I just want to make a comment if I could. I'll respond to this one. I'm from Georgia originally, and I've been in Florida for like 25 years, though, And the problem here is that they focus so much on the tourism. You heard about the new Nissan plant, Mazda plant, going up to Huntsville, Alabama.
Morning they made the announcement, yeah.
Yeah, this governor will not let industry down here. If people have very short memory, because Harley-Davidson was going to move all their plant down towards Orlando, but I know what happened. They said, hey, we don't want to see the Harley-Davidson plant coming down to go to the beach in Sarasota. It's ridiculous, But they have to have industry here, and this has been a retirement state for 100 years, and it'll never change. I mean, I don't know how you're going to change it without getting these knuckleheads out of office, you know. But even then, they still back up the industries that pay them the most, you know.
All right. Ray, Miles, thanks for the comment. Thank you for the comment. And I meant to say Toyota Mazda just announced a plant in Alabama, I think it was. What would you say, Ray, about that?
Well, I do think that it's possible for things to change in Florida. And certainly, you know, we will need to change who's in the legislature, who's in the governor's mansion, you know, in order for those things to start changing. But I think, you know, you could see under a more progressive administration, a more progressive or even just a more moderate state legislature, less of a focus on tax cuts and corporate giveaways for people who really don't need them, and more of a focus on investing in the things that improve the quality of life in the state and that creates a better business environment for businesses that are already here to expand and also can become more attractive for businesses and other places who want to come here. So again, you know, I think closing off a lot of the unnecessary loopholes that are in the tax code and redirecting some of that revenue into investing in K-12 education, where we've been behind for over a decade, and many would argue much longer than that, into higher education, vocational training, into just basic infrastructure improvements in mass transit as well, improving just the healthcare safety net. All of these things, and I think also, you know, stop preempting local governments from doing things like enacting earned sick days and just basic changes that would really improve the quality of life for hardworking Floridians and simultaneously improve the business climate as well.
Yeah, you know, if you build an auto factory here, I would guess that would be pretty problematic given our environment and how close the groundwater is, how important groundwater is here in the state of Florida, and how much we all love the environment. But if we went to kind of like clean jobs, computer related, STEM related, research related, something related to universities and medical, I mean, that would be the way out. And as you said, by investing in education and university education, that would seem to be the way forward. You could still have people doing blue-collar work, constructing, rebuilding the infrastructure, building these new university or research centers, but I'm not so sure that a factory is the right way to go given our environment.
Yes, and indeed, you know, the goal of a progressive economic policy is to create an economy that works for everyone, not just those who are wealthy and well-connected. And the way you get there is by investing in these important elements that affect our quality of life: education, healthcare, environmental protection, affordable housing, infrastructure, those things. And getting away from the policies of the last few years, really of the last 20 years, which have just been cuts, deregulation, and degrading social services.
Our guest is Ray Seaman. You can find him at progressflorida.org. You mentioned local preemption there a moment ago. I mean, there are cities around the state that think that Tallahassee doesn't have all the answers, and they're experimenting with things like better working conditions, better pay, more sick leave. Some want to not arrest people who are here who are undocumented, but Tallahassee seems to think that it knows best.
Indeed, and it's very ironic for the political party of so-called small government to be the ones that are basically pointing the finger at cities and counties and saying, we know better than you do. But that's exactly what they're doing, because really, you know, all this preemption that Tallahassee's been trying to push against local government really has nothing to do with being conservative, and it has everything to do with just accumulating more power for themselves and their corporate benefactors.
What do you think about this idea? There's a legislator up there in Tallahassee who thinks that we should move the state capital out of Tallahassee. Has Progress Florida taken a look at that issue, and do you think there's value to it? I mean, some people think that Tallahassee is so small, so hard to get to, so representative of Georgia and Alabama culture that the state capital of Florida really should be closer to Orlando, Lakeland, Tampa, you know, the center part of the state.
Yeah, Progress Florida doesn't have a position on that. It just for me personally, you know, I live here in Tallahassee, so it's a little bit hard for me to say.
You like it, yeah.
Yeah, Tallahassee's a great little town and city, but, you know, I think really one of the things that we should really be looking at is for legislators to just be better connected to their communities in general. You know, legislators are up here in Tallahassee 2 months out of the year. They do very important work, and I agree it would be nicer if they were a little more accessible during that time. But I think one of the ways we could potentially, you know, lessen that problem is really for legislators just to be more visible and active in their community during the other 10 months out of the year. You know, I think if you talk to most Floridians and ask if they knew who their state representative or their state senator was and when was the last time they ever talked with them, you know, or sent them an email or made a phone call, very few would be able to give a definitive answer on that front. And I think that's the real problem. You know, certainly if the state capitol was located more centrally, yeah, you might have some more people involved, but I think that there's a lot more we could be doing, you know, before we literally take the very drastic step of moving the entire state capitol, or even just the legislative function to, like, Tampa or Orlando. So I would argue let's focus on that first. And if you don't mind my saying as well, Rob, you know, one of the best things you can do is connect with an organization like Progress Florida by going to progressflorida.org and signing up to get our alerts, because we're regularly watching things up here and we're regularly sending out emails and occasionally text messages as well about key bills that are coming up and how you can take action and, you know, how to call your legislator, et cetera. So I think step one for every Floridian who wants to improve state government is to just get more informed and get more involved about what's going on.
Our guest is Ray Seaman. He's with a group called Progress Florida, and our phone number is 813-239-9663. Ray, some of the emails that have come in, Bob in Tarpon Springs says the Florida legislature has demonstrated that they're more about advancing Republican ideology than they are about helping the people of Florida. That's Bob's opinion from Tarpon Springs. Terry writes this. He said, regarding the caller who suggested people become sole proprietors, Terry says, I'm a sole proprietor. My tax rate is the same as anyone else's. And now I'm having trouble with this email because our email has suddenly stopped. Let's take some phone calls. We're going to go to Lisa in Clearwater. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air with Ray Seaman from Progress Florida. What would you like to say?
Hi. I just wanted to know if you would address career service. The reason we have government career service is so that employees feel dedicated to do their job, and if you look in third world countries, there's a graft taken because government employees don't have a secure pension and health benefits, and it's one of those things that they want to do a really good job because they want to, at some point in the end, have a pension, and so they sacrifice, you know, higher salaries while they're working for the government. They do a good job. They don't take graft, and they do those jobs that must be done by public service. So our career service system at the federal, state, county, and city levels are very important. Maybe you could talk about that.
All right. Thanks, Lisa.
I couldn't agree more. Civil service protections are really important to just protecting just the integrity of the people's government at the end of the day. Florida, unfortunately, reduced and removed a lot of their civil service protections under Jeb Bush in the early 2000s. But certainly, you know, the pension system, the Florida retirement system, which state employees and many local government employees and school districts enjoy, has been one of the most successful pension and one of the most secure pension systems in the country. Now, that has not stopped the legislature from literally every year trying to undermine that system and trying to push more state employees towards more privately invested plans. In other words, having more money managed by Wall Street as opposed to the state pension system. Unfortunately, the legislature was able to score a victory and a defeat, I think, for working people in the last session where they changed the default option for the Florida retirement system from that good pension plan into something called the defined contribution plan, which is the private, more private investment plan. So if you're a new state employee or a new local government employee, anyone who participates in the Florida retirement system, and you don't make a choice, then you're automatically put into the more private investment plan. So that's unfortunate, but bigger attacks against the FRS, the Florida retirement system, have thankfully failed. But I think, you know, part of any progressive agenda in Tallahassee in the future is going to be about continuing to protect and secure retirement security for our hardworking public employees.
Well, we're talking about the opening of the state legislative session. It just began yesterday. It's a 60-day session. The governor and the Speaker of the House opened it by saying that they don't want to raise taxes and they want to figure out ways to make it harder to raise taxes here in Florida. And we've been looking at the issues of jobs and the quality of jobs, education, and health care. And we're going to talk about the environment with Ray Seaman, who is with the group Progress Florida. I just finished Terry's email. Terry's in St. Pete. He says, I'm a sole proprietor. My tax rate is the same as anyone else's. Becoming a small business instead of an employee is not the answer. It just shifts traditional costs, benefits away from large employers. And then Elio writes, I remember when President Obama wanted to give Florida money for shovel-ready jobs and Scott declined, and the state still put the crook back in office, writes Elio. And David writes this, within the first 15 minutes, I think I heard a coherent 2018 campaign platform for the Florida Democratic Party. I hope they're listening. That's David, who's in Tampa, listening. And we're going to go back to the phones right now. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. The state legislative session is really important. It's so far away in Tallahassee, but people should pay close attention to it because everything that we care about, the environment and education, healthcare and jobs, it's really up to the legislature to try to solve some of those problems. Let's go to Dan in Tampa. Hi, Dan, you're on. What's your question for Ray Seaman?
Well, I really have some comments, Rob. With the auto plant thing, we are the only southern state that doesn't have an auto plant. And I know you're talking about the groundwater, but they could put one in North Florida. They don't worry about the groundwater quite so bad up there. But and having said that, down here, like you can, every aspect of our life is on the low ball end of everything. The nurses here get paid less than other states. The teachers here, basically, and everything is based on retirement and people coming in vacationing. That's it. There's no other kind of businesses here, really. And that's what this state is set up for. And I don't know why people don't realize this.
Well, but so Dan, are you happy with that? And if you're not happy, what do you think we should? Okay, so what would you do about it?
Well, like the gentleman was talking about earlier, the loophole for if you're not based here, you don't get taxed in a certain way like the people that are here, number one. Number two, let's try to bring some auto people here to North Florida and put an auto plant in Florida.
And I should say that there are auto plants. And excuse me, Dan. There are auto plants here. I know in Lakeland they have a big safety bag plant. So there are some component plants.
The cars. I'm not talking about where the airbags are made or something like that, Rob. I'm talking about where the cars are actually made. Alabama actually got four.
Well, Dan, I think you should call your state representatives and tell them to
I called Rubio. I call them all up. Trust me.
Okay.
I call them all.
All right.
Like I say, the other thing is, it's like right now the teachers in all these counties here are struggling. I don't care if it's against the law. Walk off the job, people.
Well, it's illegal to strike. It's illegal to strike here in Florida.
I don't care if it's illegal or not. They're not going to jail them all, Rob. If you've got 20,000 teachers walk up the job, they will not jail them all.
All right. Dan, thanks a lot. Thank you so much. You know, just going back to education, Ray, that is a big problem. The governor says he's going to spend more money on education, but he's getting it from, just as you pointed out, the rise in local property tax values. He's not really putting more state resources toward education, if he does increase education spending this year. But we've got teachers all around the state. In Hillsborough County, they're upset. They're not getting the the promised raises. Sarasota, 400 people just protested outside the school board yesterday. In Lakeland and Polk County, they have an unmet need of about $500 million in capital projects at their schools. All around the state, there are education needs, and it seems like Tallahassee doesn't really realize the extent of how deep these needs are.
Indeed, and in fact, Tallahassee's main response to the financial needs of traditional public schools is to, in fact, ignore that and actually make the problem worse by diverting more and more of our tax dollars into charter schools, which are technically part of the public school system, but are not, they're not governed by our elected school boards. They're kind of off on their own. And they don't have to meet the same standards. They're not as transparent as well. And certainly that's been a priority of House Speaker Corcoran in particular, who passed a major charter school giveaway in the last legislative session. And the worst thing is there's no real evidence that shows that charters really do much better than traditional public schools. So in essence, there's just this diversion of funds, which has just made the problem even worse.
And Richard Corcoran said yesterday in his speech on the House floor, or to House members rather, that because of bullying in schools, he wants to see more money for charter schools and bullying in public schools. What did you make of that?
I think it's particularly grotesque, I think, for someone like Speaker Corcoran to use the very serious issue of bullying in schools as a pretext to divert more of our tax dollars into charter schools. It doesn't really solve the problem of bullying at all. Basically, what you're doing is you're keeping the kids doing the bullying in the public schools while taking the kids who allegedly have been bullied and giving them the option to go to a charter school. You haven't done anything to solve the problem, but you have served the interests of charter management companies who have certainly been handing off quite a lot of cash to state legislators over the last few years to kind of promote their agenda. So I find it really appalling that that House Speaker Corcoran is using the issue of bullying to advance the reactionary anti-public school agenda.
Ray, we just have a minute left, but a few years ago, Florida voters passed this conservation amendment to the state constitution that would devote hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, to buying up endangered land here in Florida. How much money have they spent what percent of that money that voters approve would you say that they've spent in Tallahassee on what the voters actually wanted?
The answer is hardly any. There has been and this just once again shows you just how out of touch the Republican-led legislature and Governor Scott have been in terms of actually listening to what Florida voters have been telling them. There is some movement this year to appropriate some money for land conservation, and Governor Scott mentioned that at his State of the State address yesterday. Whether that actually happens or not, we'll see. I'm hopeful, but let's not forget the fact that Florida voters have been betrayed several years in a row now in terms of funding for land and water conservation, which is essential for protecting the Florida we love. But also, this is about the water we drink and the air we breathe, and also whether our state, can handle major weather events. We've certainly seen some of that with hurricanes, et cetera. So this stuff is really important. It's not just about preserving beautiful spaces. This is very much about our health and safety as well.
Well, if you want to keep up with what's going on in Florida politics, one way to do it is to go to the progressflorida.org website. Mm-hmm. And Ray Seaman is from Progress Florida. Ray, thank you so much for coming on and shedding some light about what's going on in Tallahassee.
Thank you, Rob. Really appreciate this opportunity, and really appreciated the feedback and talking with your listeners.
All right. Well, I hope we have you back before the end of the session. Thanks, Ray.
I'd love to do that. Thanks,
all right,
Rob.
Thanks. You can find Ray Seaman at progressflorida.org. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Stay tuned, because coming up next, we'll hear the Midpoint program. If you want to comment about anything you've heard here for the last hour, you can call us up at 813- 238-8001 and record an actual comment, good or bad, about this program, and we'll play it back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. And tomorrow we'll be talking about killer robots here on this show. Should be interesting. Stay tuned for the latest news. I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF in Tampa, and thanks to the great Jeff Haynes for being our phone producer today.